What is going on, New England? 1510 NBC and Yahoo Sports Radio Boston. Good day to you wherever you are listening to us on www.1510nbcsportsradio.com. Welcome to the Q Spot. I'm your host, Tom Quinlan, and this is the show that's going to get you all you need to know of everything that's going on with the New England Revolution. We'll talk about the New England soccer community as a whole. Talk about the colleges around here. We'll talk about the high school players. We'll talk about what the Revs are doing with inside their academy to build the sport here in the region. And we'll also talk about the world. Not just the national teams, as we have the World Cup coming up in less than 200 days now. We'll talk about Premier League, the Barclays Premier League. We'll talk a little La Liga. We'll talk Serie A. We'll talk whatever you want. We'll talk about the Champions League with Martin Rogers today of Yahoo Sports. He'll join me. From New England Soccer Today, Sean Donahue will also join me. He'll kick off our Revolution talk. Talk to me, email me, tquinlan2009@gmail.com with your questions. We'll figure out a Twitter. I'm not into the whole Twitter thing. I had one personally, and I deleted it. We won't get into that. I don't get it. People like it, though. All right, right now I want to jump to the Boston's Energy Drink Hotline. From New England Soccer Today, Mr. Sean Donahue joining me now on the show. Sean, thank you for joining the Q Spot.
Thanks for having me.
Oh, no problem, man. So get right into it with us. We have the MLS Super Draft right around the corner here, and this is an exciting time for the New England area because, you know, before we get into the player aspect of it, the Revs through the years have done pretty well through the MLS Super Draft.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly have, I think. Starting with the Steve Nichol era, they've gotten a lot of great players. You look over the years, this team was really built largely through the Super Draft. They haven't been a big team for trade, so they've been, you know, some great additions. Guys like Michael Parker, Clint Dempsey, who's gone on to be a big star for the national team. Taylor Twellman is obviously huge. Shari Joseph was the foundation for this team for years. And then in recent years, they've gotten guys like Andrew Farrell, the number one pick, who turned out to be a great guy for the team. So, Cal Rowe the year before. So they've really done fantastic in the Super Draft, and it's really been the building block for a lot of this team's success.
And even go back to 2009 with Kevin Alston, and then the year after, A.J. Soares. It seems like the Revs are a unique team in the sense that they want to build from the American system and not go overseas and rely on European players to build the organization.
Yeah, I mean, they certainly do. I think part of that might be they don't have the great connections overseas that maybe some of the other teams do as far as bringing guys in. But I also don't think they want to expend the resources to bring in a guy like a Thierry Henry that's going to, you know, cost them, you know, millions and millions of dollars, or a guy like, you know, David Beckham. And I also don't think, you know, the market maybe is as attractive as in New York City or Los Angeles, so maybe those options aren't out there. But they do some great scouting in the U.S. to find some great college players, and they've been very successful with the drafts over the years, and it's worked out for them, and it's a good way to build the deep team without expending too much money on individual players. But certainly not bringing in many big-name players from Europe also has, you know, downsides as well. Mm.
And then a guy that you mentioned just before was Andrew Farrell, and Andrew Farrell has been really just a breath of fresh air if you're a guy that just enjoys watching defense and defensive structure. Tell me what he's done for this organization and his young presence out there and how the Revs are looking to build around Farrell in the back line and that type of player.
Yeah, I think for the Revs, the outside back position has always kind of been shuffled around. You had Kevin Alston there, and he obviously had his injury issues and his health issues that prevented him from, you know, being your day-to-day guy. And Andrew Farrell came in, and he's just fantastic in the back. He's got tons of speed, lots of strength, really locked down that right-back position, and hopefully will be there for years to come for the team. I think he does still have some areas he can improve in, and offensively, he's great at getting forward, but the final pass and the final cross isn't necessarily there. That's certainly something he can work on. But extremely young guy, and he's shown he can mark the best players in the league. at that right back position. And really, if the Reds can keep him for a long time going forward, expect him to continue to develop, lock down that position, be a building block for the Reds back there. And he's certainly been proven so far that he was worth trading up to get that number one pick.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a key point, is that the Revs are building, like, as going back to before, building up in the draft, the Revs going ahead and reaching out and trying to get that first pick. So that obviously contributes to them, you know, building around the idea of building in America. But they also did go out overseas. It's not like they haven't expended, used that as a source. Using Jose Gonsalves, Defender of the Year, that was a huge signing for the Revs, an even bigger player just out on the pitch day in and day out.
Oh, absolutely. I think he was probably the most important addition to the Revolution over the past several years. He completely turned that defense around. I think the year before, there were a lot of holes in the Revolution's defense. This year, he made it one of the best defenses in the league. His presence out there, his positioning, his calmness, his ability to win the ball in the back. Sometimes he tries to dribble the ball a bit, and I think puts a little bit of fear in everybody in there watching him, but he manages to do it successfully a lot. And he's just been a fantastic leader and taking over as captain. He's just been an amazing addition to this team, and I think offered more than anyone could have expected, and as shown by him winning Defender of the Year.
Yeah, and with him winning Defender of the Year, going forward, what's the next step now with the Revs? How do you build on that type of momentum?
I mean, I think that he's been fantastic back there, and I think they need to help build around him. As far as the other center back position, I think you saw Stephen McCarthy there for much of the year, and he did a good job. And then it seemed like he lost the spot towards the end of the year, and AJ Soares stepped in. But I think you need to find some stability with who's going to be playing next to him. McCarthy has a lot of potential. AJ Soares also was a guy they drafted and thought very highly of. Seemed to have a bit of a sophomore slump, and then this year was good at times, and other times made some mistakes. So I think that it's important that they find somebody, whether it's one of those two or whether it's somebody else, that can solidify that spot back there, and that'll be huge for the team. And then I also think they need to figure out, who's going to be the left back. You've seen Chris Tierney there a lot. He's done admirably. But the position in MLS where you want to have a guy with some speed, there's a lot of speedy right wingers in the league, and that's an area where Tierney struggles, not the fastest guy in the league. If you have a guy like Landon Donovan going at him, it's a matchup problem for the Revolution. So I think they really need to figure out who's going to be their left back. Kevin Olsen's out of contract. You don't know if he's coming back next year. It's unclear what the situation is there. So that's an area they need to focus on. But in Farrell and Gonsalves, those two guys have locked down their spots, and having them next year, very promising for the Revolution back line.
How important is it for the Revs to re-sign Kevin Olsen?
I mean, it's a difficult question because you don't know what he's going to bring to the table. I think he came on as, when he switched over to left back, he performed very well. I think you saw he was another guy that came to the team with a lot of promise, had a great first year, but didn't develop the way you would hope. Whether it was the cancer he had that affected him, or whatever it was, when he made the switch over to left back, all of a sudden he started to play better. He played that position in college a lot, even though he's a right-footed guy. He looks good there. So he's a guy that right now I think you want to bring back at least for depth purposes. Certainly can fill in at right back when you need him, can fill in at left back when you need him. But to me, it's very unclear whether or not he will develop into that starting caliber player that you thought he would when he first came to the team. So he's a guy that if you can get back at the right price, he'd be great to have on the squad. He's a good locker room guy, great guy to have for those two positions, has a lot of speed. But, again, I'm not sure he's someone that you can bring back and say he's going to be our left back. We're sure he's going to be a great MLS starter there, because I don't think you've seen enough to be sure of that at this point.
Do you think his health triggers some of those worries?
I think it certainly does. It's hard. Again, it's hard to rely on him because all his injuries he had, addition to cancer, the hamstring injuries that he constantly had over his career that have kept him out, slowed him down. I think that's hurt his development as well. So it would be very tough to go and, I believe he was making six figures past few seasons. It'd be very tough to go and give him a big contract like that and say he's going to be your starter going forward, because you just don't know with him. There's too many question marks.
Depth is definitely going to be a key focus point for the Revolution moving forward, especially, as you were saying, Sean, on that outside position. They're going to want somebody that can lock it down, as Andrew Farrell has. Let's move up the pitch a little bit now. Midfield, Kellen Rowe, just an exceptional player.
Yeah, I mean, when he first came to the team, they plugged him in at right midfield, and I don't think he was very comfortable in that position his rookie year. You know, he showed signs of what the player he could become, but then this year they moved him to the central position, which is where he played mostly throughout his college career, and he just completely became a different player. He was, you know, really an all-star for this team the way he played. Turned things around and was a key figure with his ability to score from long range, his ability to, you know, play some excellent passes. You know, him in the center field is just a huge difference for this team, and having him there was really one of the reasons the Revolution were able to make it to the playoffs this year, because of how much his contributions went up when they switched him from, you know, outside mid, where, you know, he wasn't so comfortable, to in the center of the field, where he's a, you know, fantastic player.
And does that trigger maybe the question of, as he gets older, can he just be indisposable anywhere in the field as experience comes along here?
I mean, it's a good question. You know, when he was on the wings, some of the questions were about his defensive ability, and maybe his crossing ability. When he's in the center, he just, you know, his vision makes him so much more, you know, a central focal point of this offense, that makes him so much more involved. You know, gives him to be in those positions where he can take those long shots that are so key for the team. I mean, I think for this team's future, you want him to be in the center. Could he play on the wings as he gets older? I mean, I think that is something that he can certainly develop and learn. I think he was getting better at it towards the end of the year, his first year on the team. But I think he's a guy that you want to have in the middle and hopefully get, you know, good wingers around him to play those spots, because I think you lose too much by putting him out in the wings.
5'8", though, it's tough to play center defensive mid at such a smaller height. Not saying that, you know, triggers the idea that he can't play that position, but usually a center defensive mid, sometimes you think of a taller, more physical player. Kellen Rowe, definitely physical, but doesn't he seem like the type of guy in the center of the field that can go forward more? Doesn't he seem like that type of player that enjoys going up there with Diego?
Oh, yeah, I think you certainly want him as, you know, more of your attacking center midfielder with,
right,
an enforcer behind him. A guy like Shari Joseph back when it was prime, if you could find somebody like that and put behind him, I think that would be your ideal situation. I mean, they had Scott Caldwell, a rookie back there, and he did admirably. Great passing from that position. But he's another guy that, you know, 5'8", not your prototypical central defensive midfielder, not really your enforcer. And I think that was, you know, another area last year that they could improve upon, and finding a guy that, you know, can be your central defensive midfielder that, you know, is a great passer from that position, but also a guy who's physical, you know, can win those balls, you know, a little bit of an enforcer, you know, has some big back there, which is really what they've been missing since, you know, guys like Shar Joseph and Jeff Reynolds left. They didn't have that guy. I mean, they brought in Clyde Sims, who, you know, again, is another guy who's a decent passer out of the back, doesn't have the vision of Scott Caldwell, and, you know, is great at breaking up passes, but still they're lacking, and, you know, a guy back there can be physical, a guy who can, you know, impose his will on a game, and I think that's an area that, going forward, that they'd probably like to address.
Is there anyone out on the market that can fill that role, you think, for the Revs?
I mean, as far as within the league, I'm not sure there is. I think I think that's a position that is highly sought after in the league, because there's not a lot of, you know, Shari Joseph's out there.
Right.
There's not a lot of, you know, Pablo Mascheroni's out there, and, you know, the guys that you think of are getting older. And I'm not really sure if there's someone in the draft class that could fill that. I mean, Joseph was a guy they drafted in the second round, and turned out to be one of the, you know, best players in team history. So I don't know if that could come. You know, they have Andy Dorman, who they put in that position, who did all right filling in there. But again, I don't think he's the long-term solution. Khalifa Cisse was a guy they brought in that looked like he could be that guy, but injuries kind of derailed, you know, his ability in that spot. So, you know, I think that's a position that you might want to go and actually see who's available and try to bring someone in that way. See if you can get another guy with a, you know, similar pedigree to Cisse, and hope that he doesn't have the same injury problems.
We'll stick with the midfield here for a second, Sean. Sean Donahue, New England Soccer Today. You're listening to the Q-Spot here on 1510 NBCSportsRadio.com. You look on the wings. Do they need speed, or do you want a guy that can just cross the ball in there for Diego?
Well, it's interesting, because the way Jake Heaps has played it, he's often tried, you know, inverted wingers, having a guy like Sen on the right so he can get forward and get a shot in. And crossing really hasn't been the focal point of the wings for Heaps' side so far, which is, you know, interesting decision. He's even played guys like Mbongo, who are really more of a striker on the wings. To me, I think that's another area that they certainly could improve on. They played Diego a lot on the wings, and that's worked because he has the ability to cut inside, get shots off. You know, he's got a decent cross. They played Cyrus Sen on the left wing, and I think that's had mixed results. He's another guy that can at times put in a good cross, capable of putting a great shot off, but you know, sometimes seems a little bit lost out in the wing. And he's another guy that has that long-term ankle injury that he's recovering from, so you don't know when he's going to be back and when he's going to be 100% next year. And after Diego and Sten, they don't really have many options on the wing. I mean, there's Chris Tierney, but he might end up being your left back again. So that's a position that I think they really need to address. And if you look at some of their stats last year, their crossing accuracy and their total crosses put in were among the lower teams in the league. So that's definitely something that they can improve upon. I think Fagundes' position is probably going to be out in the wing with more of a target striker up top, and him playing off of him and sending in good crosses. I think he's thrived in that role this year, obviously, with his 13 goals and 7 assists. On the left side, I think you certainly have more question marks. Like I said, you don't know when Sten's going to be back. You don't know when he's going to be 100%, and you don't have that much depth after either of those two. So that's a position I think you probably add some depth from the draft. But I think it's also a position you might want to look to see if there's someone you can bring in from outside the league or more experiences in the league to really give some options in that, those wide areas.
And scoring, though, it didn't seem like it was much of a problem for the Revs this year because they were able to put goals into the back of the net when they needed to. It was just interesting, I think, for me, just the progression of the ball upfield. At times, it was crystal. It looked great. But other times, it was sketchy. But they were able to take advantage, the Revolution were, of opponents' mistakes, just because I think the Revolution might be a little advanced right now than more teams in the MLS, which is why they finished up third. Do you think that the Revs' possession play needs to change at all here, Sean?
Well, that's a great question, because you look at when they were successful last year, and it was when Juan Agudelo was on the field.
Right.
Agudelo came into this team, really turned it around, made the formation that wasn't working so well, all of a sudden look great and, play the silky smooth soccer. And if you actually look at the games where Juan Agudelo didn't play, their points per game would have left them in eighth place rather than third place. So I think that just shows you the impact that he had on this team. And it's highly unlikely that he's coming back next year. I think that's pretty much off the table. So a lot depends on who you put up top. I mean, he was a guy that was able to play with his back to goal, win balls up there, keep possession, and guys could play off of him. If they don't have a guy like that, then they really do need to change their style. Right now, I'm not sure they do have a guy like that in the roster. I mean, Jerry Benson's back. He's a guy that's shown great play for Honduras, but it hasn't translated to Revs. I think everybody sees him play for Honduras, and the hope is always there that someday that will translate. But, having been almost 2 years now and not having seen it, it's a bit of a stretch to assume that all of a sudden he's going to become that guy. Charlie Davies might be back next year. I think they're trying to bring him back. He doesn't seem to be that type of player. He seems to be another guy that you maybe even one of the wings or playing off of the center striker. So if they can't find a guy to replace Juan Agudelo, I think they're they are due for some sort of formation change, maybe playing two up top, because with him out of the lineup, their style of possession didn't work. When he was in the lineup, for the most part, they were playing some great soccer. Passing was well, keeping possession, out-possessing other teams when you're out of the lineup. That wasn't the case. So it really does come down to whether or not they can find a replacement that plays the same style to him.
Sean Donahue, New England Soccer Today. Thank you so much for joining me, my man. Hopefully we'll talk to you down the line as Revs training camps open up. We're going to have a lot on the plate to digest here.
Yeah, it's an amazingly short off-season. So.
Amazingly short off-season, it is. You would think that they would just change it to the European style by now.
I mean, if there weren't for teams in New England and the weather we're seeing right now, it probably would.
Exactly. We got snow coming out. There's ice falling to the ground. It's a mess out there. Be safe driving there. All right, Sean?
You too.
A lot to be excited about, the Revs. Thanks again to Sean Donahue, who's great. This weather's terrible, by the way. For the Rev side of things, though, Sean made a lot of great points. You want to have somebody defensively on that outside back position to counter what you have with Andrew Farrell. You have to find somebody strong in the center back position to put there with Gonsalves. And then moving up the field, center defensively, you might be set for a little bit with Kellen at times, but you're going to want a body back there. Think of a center defensive mid as a linebacker. And that linebacker is the most important part to your defense. So when I look at the progression of the Revs as a team right now, what they have on paper, it looks good. But there's definitely improvement that needs to be made. They want to build depth. That's a great word Sean used, depth. And it's because you want to be able to dive into the idea of how far can Jay Heaps reach into his bag of tricks game in and game out. There's a lot to be discussed on the MLS side of things. Going over now to the Premier League and looking at what is going to be a great Champions League. We're going to have a lot of fun over the next couple of months leading up to the World Cup here. You're going to see some great football overseas. The Premier League race is hot. The Champions League draw was great for some, miserable for others. We're going to get into that with Martin Rogers now of Yahoo Sports. Martin, welcome to the Q-Spot.
How you doing, mate? You okay?
I'm well, thank you. Well, I'm sure it's a little bit warmer where you are right now.
Just a little bit, yeah. It's pretty nice over here. A little bit of winter kicking in, but, you know, California, it's always sunshine.
Oh, I got to love that California weather. God bless, man. Anyways, starting in the Premier League, we'll start with Liverpool, since that's the commonality for the EPL here in Boston. And right now, the Reds look hot, Martin. It's really, I think, gone understated how well Brendan Rodgers has done since taking over the helm at Liverpool.
Yeah, what a tremendous job Brendan Rodgers has done, especially this season. And I mean, last weekend was the perfect example. I expected them to slip up, quite frankly. I mean, with Steven Gerrard and Daniel Sturridge both out, I felt that they were missing two of their three key components that really makes the team tick. And I felt that Luis Suarez wouldn't be the same player without those two around him. And I couldn't have been more wrong. They absolutely dominated Tottenham. 5-0 away from home was not just a great performance, but a true statement of intent as well, that this is a team that isn't planning to go away anytime soon, that this, you know, tremendous start to the season that they had, you know, maybe it's not a fluke, and that they are a team that maybe can go on and carry on to compete for the Premier League title. I don't expect they're going to win the title. I think that at some point they're going to drop off, but you can't underestimate the job that Rodgers has done, considering all the managers who tried and failed before him to take Liverpool back to, you know, their previous glory.
And you mentioned some struggles for Liverpool that they might have encountered. I believe, personally, Liverpool might be heading into some growing pains here, and you alluded to some injuries. Losing Daniel Sturridge was a blow. Stevie G, not having him on the field is a huge blow. The transfer market, that's got to be a big time for John Henry to spend money.
But possibly, yes. I mean, and if Henry wants to sort of make a powerful statement, then he would. It's tricky, though. The January transfer window is always a very difficult time. You're rarely going to get great value for money, and you're rarely going to get a player in the right kind of situation. Normally, the type of players who are available in January are the ones who perhaps are out of favour at their club, and they're looking for a move away, and they're perhaps a little bit unsettled. And there may be personality reasons behind that. I'm not sure there's necessarily the perfect fit for Liverpool out there. I'm not sure that there's a player out there that they could go and get right now who's suddenly going to transform their season and take them from what may be like a third place finish to winning the English Premier League. It's difficult. The summer is an easier time because that's when you can go and get, you know, the prime players from big clubs potentially, as long as you pay enough money, of course. So I think it is good that Henry does seem, from what I'm hearing, to have the willingness to open up his checkbook if necessary. But I think that him and Rodgers need to be careful that they don't overspend on the wrong type of player that could really disrupt the harmony that seems to be in the team right now.
Completely agree. You don't want to overpay for average, and you don't want to overpay for somebody that's not going to contribute for you in the long term. So when I'm saying they hit the transfer market, maybe Martin, maybe a defender in Micah Richards from Manchester City is a nice little bolster to that defense, which has been sensational all year.
Yeah, I think someone like Richards could be quite good, and he's someone that you might get for, you know, a somewhat reasonable price. But defense is one area that you do think that Liverpool are going to have to shore up if they're going to, you know, just maintain this level of consistency. Because, I mean, in terms of attacking firepower, Sturridge and Suarez are about as dangerous as it gets, and Suarez is the most dynamic player in the English Premier League at this moment in time. Defensively, that's where you're going to win and lose a title, and it's often where you're going to win and lose a Champions League position with the top four poor finish as well, especially when sort of the cold winter months really kick in. January and February is almost like the moving time in the English Premier League. It's when the teams with the deeper squads generally tend to come to the fore, and that's why sort of a club like Everton have had a fantastic season so far and are in sort of fourth or fifth place, often drop off at that time of year, not because they lack talent, but they just lack that depth in the squad of January and February when you need to rotate players. I like Richards. I've known him since he was 17 years old and came into the team at Manchester City and really sort of managed to break through there. And he's a guy who really has all the talent in the world, and his career hasn't quite fulfilled its full potential. There's still plenty of time for that to happen. And I think a move to a club like Liverpool, where he's going to be valued, where he would play a lot of games, could be just the right thing to sort of reinvigorate him and certainly cement a place in the England national team as well.
And England and the English national team wouldn't mind to see one of their favorite sons playing at Anfield. And for Liverpool, the next couple of games here, Martin, Cardiff, City, Chelsea, Hull, not really a tough schedule, but those two away games, City and Chelsea, that's really going to be the killer for Liverpool that could either propel them up or bring them down.
Yeah, huge games, and especially City. I think Manchester City, perhaps the best and most informed team in the Premier League at this moment in time. Tremendous victory over Arsenal. If they can sort of curb their struggles on the road, then I think the title is theirs because they look absolutely unstoppable at the Etihad Stadium. I think that's going to be another huge game. And one of the great things about this season and the fact that there are five or more teams who are in with a genuine chance of competing for the title is that every single weekend, it seems, we have huge games. We have significant games that have genuine bearing on the outcome of the title race. And that's something that we haven't seen in previous seasons when you've had a Manchester United or whoever just running away with things and maybe 7 or 8 points clear already by this stage. But that's going to be a massive one for me. I think if Liverpool can go there and even get a draw, that would be a huge sign that this is a team that's not going away. This is a team that's prepared to fight for its life and fight for this title and have belief in its ability to stay in contention. I think that one may be a little bit beyond them.
Let's jump over to Manchester here for a second, Martin. The Citizens, as you said, huge result. They're in great form right now after a nice 6-3 defeat at home over Arsenal, the Gunners. Does that victory worry you a little bit, though, seeing Aguero go down and now finding out that he will be out for a month's time?
They've just got such strength in depth, and Aguero is the guy who is the most dynamic player for them, and he really makes a lot of good things happen. It's just that constant attacking threat. I mean, he's scored, I think it's something like 19 goals in 20 games this season now, and it's a tremendous run of form, and he's someone who can really ignite that attack at any time, even when the team's not necessarily playing well. But I think they just have the depth to cope with it, potentially, and just players stepping up at the right time. Fernandinho is one, scored 2 goals on the weekend, someone who hasn't had things all his own way since coming to the English Premier League last summer, now starting to fire. And that's a sign, I think, of a good team when you have different players step up at different times, especially when you need it. It's a sign of a confident team. And I think that's certainly what City is right now. I think that they're confident playing any other team in the Premier League. And I think they'll be confident going into the Champions League as well, despite the difficult draw.
They're on the road this week, Martin. They only have 2 wins. They've drawn twice and they've dropped 4 matches, only 8 points to show for it on the year. And they go from having 35 goals at home to only scoring 12 goals on the road. Why the drop-off for City on the road?
Yeah, that's the big X factor, and that's the thing that's going to decide the title race, if City can or cannot improve its form away from home. I think it's a strange one. I think they obviously have such confidence playing home. They play a different style, and they feel very, very confident. When teams come to the Etihad and are naturally more defensive, like every team is when they're away from home, City really counts on that, and they know how to dominate teams, and they know how to formulate a strategic and structural plan to break down those defenses. A little bit different away from home. When you've got teams coming at you a little bit more, City aren't quite so well equipped to deal with that. They feel more confident when they have a lot of possession and a lot of time on the ball, and they're the ones that are going forward. It's not necessarily a defensive lack, but it's just the way that the rhythm of the side doesn't operate quite so fluidly. Remember, you've got these incredibly talented players for the most part, a lot of very creative players, and it just doesn't sort of jive quite so well on the road. but I think Pellegrini is starting to work it out a little bit. I think getting a victory in the Champions League at Bayern Munich, you know, in reality it was a relatively meaningless match. I think that will give them the world of confidence. If you can go to the best team in Europe and get a victory on the road, then you can beat anyone.
Yeah, and he's got definitely that test coming up in February when the citizens will travel to Camp Nou, Mountain Nou, I'm calling that. For Manchester City, it's definitely going to be a tough battle. Definitely a really tough draw, Martin, for the citizens. It would have been a lot different had Manchester won that group and Pellegrini realizing what the scoreline was.
Oh, no question about it. It was quite an extraordinary situation, really. Pellegrini not realizing that one more goal would have put them at the top of the group. And that makes all the difference this time around. Look at the draws that Arsenal and Chelsea got. Chelsea and Manchester United got for topping their group, and compare them with Manchester City and Arsenal, who came second. It really made the world of difference this time around, because all the big teams in Europe won their group. So being a top seed is worth its weight in gold. But this works both ways. And then Barcelona are very, very unhappy about the fact that they got Manchester City. The front page of the Catalan newspapers was sort of greeting this news as pretty much the worst possible outcome. And Barcelona is obviously a confident team, whoever they play against, but they recognize City as a genuine threat, and they see City as the most difficult possible opponent they could have got.
Look at the other three teams there that made Champions League: Arsenal, Chelsea, and Manchester United. United climbing its way back into the top four. Chelsea, though, I think, personally, one of the better teams in form going forward the rest of the year. There are some holes that need to be filled, though, with Mourinho.
Yeah, but in terms of European action, a team that's in great form, and it could be one of those sort of split personality seasons for Chelsea, and Roman Abramovich always, as we know, puts a premium on European competition. He wants to win the Champions League in any season more than any other competition, including the English Premier League, and I think that will show through. And I think, you know, Chelsea perhaps may not continue compete right at the very top for the English Premier League, but I think they're a live contender in the Champions League, especially now with the draw that they've got. You think they probably have one foot in the quarterfinal stage, and from there anything can really happen. And they're set up well for Europe, let's face it. I mean, we saw it 2 years ago when they beat Barcelona and Bayern Munich in extraordinary fashion to win the whole thing. We saw it last year when they won the Europa League. They're a team that is built for European competition, and they thrive upon that. They have players that, you know, are very, very comfortable with the pace of the game in Europe, and I think we'll see that again. I think we'll see it again in the round of 16. We'll see it again as the competition moves forward.
Theo Walcott returning for the Gunners and Arsenal. Martin, how important is his presence out there for Arsene Wenger?
Yeah, it's huge, because it gives them an outlet, and it gives them pace, and it gives them an ability to one, catch teams on the break, and two, just to run at defenses. You know, pace is the greatest asset in modern soccer in a lot of ways. You know, if you have a player who can control the ball at that speed, it just opens up all kinds of possibilities for you. I think, you know, Walcott is the guy who perhaps doesn't have and hasn't had in his career the kind of consistency that fans of Arsenal and of the England national team would like him to have, but he's still a young guy. He's continuing to grow, and I think the fact that Arsenal are having this very good season, despite the couple of disappointing results they've had recently, has helped him, because he's a player who thrives on confidence and thrives on, you know, the collective confidence of a team. I think having Mesut Ozil at Arsenal and Mathieu Flamini back is big for Walcott, because it opens up even more opportunities for him. And then having Aaron Ramsey, another young player who's thriving so successfully, also kind of spurs him on a bit more. So it's all set up for Walcott to succeed right now, and it's really up to him to grab this opportunity.
Real quick, Wojtek Szczęsny, has his job been secured, or could he possibly see some dark days ahead with his starting job?
I think the job is Szczęsny's for now. I think it would take a few sort of, you know, howlers, if you like, for him to come under any real threat. I'm not totally convinced by Szczęsny. I think he has tremendous games. I've seen games when, you know, he's produced true world-class performances, and you think, how can this guy get any better? But I think sometimes concentration may be a little bit lacking, and he makes some decisions that aren't the best. You know, he, again, quite a young keeper, someone who's going to be improving over time. But Arsenal want to win right now. I mean, Arsenal have had 8 years of, you know, growing pain, things, and you know, this is a process that will take us to a better place and all that kind of stuff. This is time we need to start winning. So, you know, this is it's an interesting situation with Szczesny. I think Wenger feels that, you know, he has a pretty decent keeper. I don't think they'll need to go out and spend. I don't think he'd be planning to demote him anytime soon. But you know, this is a chance for Szczesny to shine, to show that he's matured as a keeper, and you know, to keep Arsenal on track. I mean, this is a crucial time this season. I mean, they've had this fantastic start, and this is a time when the questions are starting to be asked. If they can respond to this and move forward powerfully for the next month or so, then they can be in real great shape.
Finally, Manchester United getting the draw against Olympiacos. How important is it for David Moyes' job and his future with United to get the results with Olympiacos and carry that momentum forward through the Premier League and the FA Cup?
It's absolutely massive. It might be their only way back into the Champions League next season by actually winning it this year. I mean, they're so far off the pace in the Premier League, they may well fight their way back and claw their way into fourth spot, but there are going to be plenty of other teams who are desperate to hang on to that. And, the European competition has become more important for United this season than any other season in recent memory. And, you know what, even if they missed out on the Champions League, but they perhaps went on a good run in that competition this year, maybe to a semi-final or whatever, that would really help alleviate some of the questions that are being asked of Moyes, because a lot of people have serious doubts as to whether he's the right man to move the club forward. Incredibly difficult situation he went into, replacing a legend of 28 years for Alex Ferguson, but you need to show something. Even in that first season, everyone expects some growing pains, but you need to show that you have some kind of ability to motivate and inspire this team on the biggest stage of all. It doesn't get any bigger than the Champions League.
He is Martin Rogers. He is from Yahoo Sports. Check him out on Yahoo Sports' blog. Top-notch stuff from Martin Rogers, always on Yahoo. Got it. You know what? Is there anything that you're looking forward to this weekend? I know last weekend you said there's not many things that get me up at 4:45 in the morning. Arsenal and Manchester City did that for you. Is there anything that'll do that for you this weekend?
You know, I'm actually going back to England this weekend.
So oh, you're back over. Okay.
Yeah, it's a rare trip. I'm going. My son lives over there, so I'm going to go back and see him and pick him up and bring him over here for Christmas. So this is the one weekend of the year when I may not be paying too much attention to the to the Premier League. But like I say, big games every weekend, and you know,
every weekend
when you have when you have big clashes. But also more than anything, I'm looking forward to just a busy Christmas period. You have like, you know, effectively three match days in the space of 12 days. Got all the Boxing Day games on the 26th, which is going to be absolutely huge. It's really part of the English soccer culture, you know, that I grew up with and have loved for years. And I think just the fact, really, that the title race at this point is so much up for grabs. You have, I think, you know, five teams separated by about 4 points, and that's a great thing for the league, because one thing that the Premier League has really suffered from, like many of the other European top competitions, is just, you know, too much uniformity, too much of the same teams being successful, and often the title race being all but over by Christmas. Certainly not the case this year.
Certainly not the case this year. We're going to keep a close eye on it. And Martin, we'll talk to you down the line after the new year. So a happy holiday season to you and your family. Merry Christmas. Safe travels getting back stateside. And hopefully we'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, no problem. You take care, guys.
Take care, Martin. He's Martin Rogers, Yahoo Sports Radio, and some of the best soccer gets played around this time of year. Show number one in the books, the Q Spot with Tom Quinlan. I want to thank Sean Donahue, New England Soccer Today, Martin Rogers, Yahoo Sports. Plenty of more guests to come along the way here on NBC and Yahoo Sports Radio Boston. I'm Tom Quinlan. That's it for me. Happy holidays and Happy New Year.